And we return 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents, Thursday edition. I'm joined by Bonnie Berman. How are you today, Bonnie?
Nice and cold.
You stayed warm last night?
Yes, yes.
This morning?
Looking forward to a little cold weather.
Well, we make hundreds of decisions every day, but seldom reflect on their importance. Retired South Florida attorney Paul Lipton joins us now. He's written Hour of the Wolf, an experiment in ageless living, and he's visiting us from the high country of Colorado. Welcome to you, Paul Lipton.
Thank you very much. Great to be here with both of you.
Welcome. Great to have you. So we'll begin at the beginning. From all appearances, all was well in your life. You were happily married. You had a great family life. You were a successful lawyer. All was well until you realized it wasn't. So what happened?
I think it's a combination of a couple of things. One is that as I was getting older, I realized that my parents had died, my dad when he was 56, my mom when she was 52, and time began to become very precious to me each day. And then I developed an ailment, trigeminal neuralgia, which I write about in Hour of the Wolf, which is a very painful condition dealing with the fifth cranial nerve and pain.
It sounds like torture. It's a real sharp pain.
It's horrible. It's the way I describe it as I was going through it, it's as if someone was pouring acid down the inside of your face.
How do you get this?
You know, it's the sheath around the fifth cranial nerve just starts to deteriorate. Usually it happens in older folks.
Okay.
But for some reason with me, it happened when I was young, in my 40s. And we didn't know what it was. We thought it was some root canal work to be done, things like that. And we kept trying to figure out what it was until I was diagnosed with it. And then I went on the journey of medications and every other type of thing, acupuncture, medication, meditations, anything to do to try to deal with pain. And as we all know, pain is so debilitating and it exhausts you. Mm-hmm. And you start to feel like a victim. You can't help but feel like a victim. And then a dear friend of mine sent me a book, and I love books, and the book was The Making of a Neurosurgeon Working in a Very Small Space, the story of Dr. Peter Janetta. He developed a procedure to deal with this exact problem. I contacted him in Pittsburgh, sent him my documents, and the short version of the story, as I write, is that I went to Pittsburgh a little over 10 years ago, had the procedure. They drill a hole, and they basically resheath the fifth cranial nerve. And it's been 10 years and a few months, and God bless, I'm fine.
So you decided not to be a victim and suffer, and you got this surgery. How did having something like this affect your subsequent decisions in your life?
Great question. What happened was, as you said, you start to feel like a victim, and you start to feel like nothing's working. Medication also becomes debilitating. I would spend a lot of time reflecting and then saying, well, how do I deal with pain? And I went on various journeys that I discuss in Hour of the Wolf. I went to shaman retreats. I went to the Himalayas. I was just searching for some higher calling, some way to deal with life's pains. And I then came to the conclusion that this happens to all of us. We all go through dark times, either it's personal or physical or spiritual, whatever it may be, professional. We all go through really dark times, and you can either be trapped in the belly of the whale, or, as Joseph Campbell says in Hero with a Thousand Faces, that's part of the hero's journey, to go through the belly of the whale. And I said, I'm going to go on a hero's journey, and we all have a hero's story to tell.
So what about the title of the book, Hour of the Wolf? Where does that come from?
Hour of the Wolf is considered 2-3 o'clock in the morning. It's that time when so many people wake up. and they don't know why. They wake up and they look at the clock and it's 2, 2:30 or 3 o'clock. And they're dealing with regrets or what they said or things are not working out, or in many people's either going through the midlife crisis time or as an older than that, what happened? What happened to the dream? What happened to the plan? And they fret about it. And I decided to call the book Hour of the Wolf because it's such a universal concept of regrets. And therefore, I decided to write how to, if you go into it, how to get out of it. And my solution for me, and I hope for the reader, is that we're on this journey. We're going to make mistakes, but it's our one journey. And we want to have a great story to tell at the end. There's always going to be the look back. And you say, did I do my life proud?
If you'd like to join in this conversation with Paul Lipton, please call us at 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Perhaps you've confronted those stirrings at 2 or 3 in the morning. Now, and you can also email radio@wlrn.org. I was just thinking when I was reading your book, we do all have those moments, I think most of us do, in the middle of the night and questioning things. Now, did you have them earlier in life that you just didn't pay attention to? Did you have these stirrings before that you just didn't heed?
Yes, I did. I think it was natural being a professional, being in the job world.
And busy.
Busy and running and not being there for the kids party or school event because you had to be at the office, and then you'd wake up and say, I can't believe I missed, you know, the concert in third grade of my little third grader because I had to be at a business meeting. And you have all these mixed emotions, and I think they haunt people at the hour of the wolf. It's called the witching hour, the midnight mind. It's that mind that races. And so yes, absolutely.
Tell us about what you mean by living an unfiltered life.
What I'm talking about is this. It seems that we start restricting ourselves, especially as we start to get older. We're restricting ourselves by an age, so to speak. And so what we're talking about there is being all you can be. Being 100% of 100%. Don't filter yourself. Tell the person you love that you love them. You know, be present with those who matter to you. Don't hold back. And for me, it was liberating. Writing this book was liberating. It was me finally saying, I want to tell you about a journey that we're all on. It's a universal journey. Take it with me. You can be heroic in your life story. But you must be present in it.
Now, you and your wife both had successful careers.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
And you left your careers.
Yes.
How did you find the courage to do that? Was it, had you just had enough, or you said, I'm not living my life to the fullest?
Great question again. There came a moment in time when you kind of look at the calendar and you look at the clock and you become very robotic in what you're doing. You're just doing the same thing day in and day out.
The routine.
And I said, we have this window of time. I write in the book, and I don't mean this in a morbid way. I mean this in the most positive way. We can all agree on this concept. Nobody gets out of life alive.
No, they don't.
So since that's the reality, why can't we enjoy the moment, enjoy the day? And I turned to Margie, my wife, of married 45 years, and said, let's re-enter the unknown. Let's go into the unknown. And that's what we did.
What about people who are less fortunate than you and your wife? You were a high-paid attorney, and she was a professional sociologist. Those who can't afford to pick up and move to Colorado.
I understand that completely. And what I'm suggesting is that you can make little changes to become more present in your life. You don't have to do something dramatic, but I write about five decisions that we all make, and those five decisions permit us to be all we can be. And those five decisions are health, taking care of yourself, that you matter, calendar yourself in, being present with your family and friends more, not it's all business and I'm busy, 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 I don't have time for you. Be present. We're in a 24/7 world. Connect with something larger, a spirit, whether it's religion or nature or something that's larger than just the 24/7 news cycle, etc. Keep learning something new. There's a passion in learning something new. Being present in that, whether it's at your job, learning something new, or just taking up a cool hobby, but find time for yourself. And the last is...
Or taking a class.
Exactly right. Taking classes, learning the guitar, learning the trumpet, taking dance lessons, something to get out of the routine and the rut.
Do you volunteer also?
I do. And that's very important. And the last decision is you're supposed to have fun. This is our one time here. You're supposed to have some fun in your life.
Unless you're reincarnated.
You're absolutely right.
And who knows?
Who knows? But since I don't know the answer to that, I do want to say that I want to enjoy this journey. I want to enjoy this trip.
Now, our culture embraces youth. It sort of eschews those of a certain age. Ageism is pretty ingrained in our society. So how did you overcome that prejudice? You were telling us the story about, which is a great story about being in the Rocky Mountain path? And tell us about that and how you kind of made this decision not to let age define you.
The subtitle of the book is An Experiment in Ageless Living. And by that I mean the day is ageless. I know I'm aging. I'm aware of that. But the day is ageless, and I'm living in that ageless day. So the event happened that Margie and I were in our car with our grandson at the Rocky Mountain National Park. We go to the gate, and the ranger there, being very nice, a nice young man, he was trying to be helpful. He leaned in, and he said, you know, anyone here a senior citizen? And I kind of looked at him frowning because I had just tried a pretty big case a week or two before. And
you mean you were this high-powered
lawyer? I was this high-powered lawyer. And I said, oh, man. I said, well, yes. And he said, well, then good. And he wasn't condescending, but I took it that way. And he said, well, then you can get in here for a discount, et cetera. I went through the park, and when I got back to the hotel that night, I turned to March and I said, I'm going to write a book. And she said, what? I said, I felt different. I felt discriminated against. I know that wasn't his intention, but I felt that way. I'm just me today. I'm not a certain age. I'm Paul, you're Margie, today. And we have the opportunity to do anything we want today. And I don't know why people, because of a birthday, start restricting themselves voluntarily. Well, I can't do that, I'll get hurt. I can't do that, it may be dangerous. I submit to you that as we get older, we should be more liberated.
George Carlin has this routine where he would talk about getting old and saying that at least people will pick up your baggage for you. And also, if you're at a family dinner, you can just say, I want to go home and nobody else will bother me.
Right. You know, my take on it all is that we're on this incredible adventure. And my greatest fear, I tell my kids this, was with my last day with my last breath, I don't want to say, and I was afraid of doing what? I was fearful of what? I was worrying about what? So we should re-enter the unknown, whether it's just a little bit, trying something new, but getting out of that routine that says, I'm getting old, and therefore I have to restrict myself. I know there are restrictions, but don't box yourself in.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, Bonnie will take your email. That's radio@WLRN.org.
You also talk about recapturing the passion.
Yes. Too often, we find people as they get older starting to phone their life in. They have their routine again. They're in that rut.
Mm-hmm.
Margie and I started riding motorcycles. I started riding a motorcycle probably when I was around, maybe 55 or 60. Margie got her bike when she was about 63 or 64. And when we go for a ride through the mountains in Colorado, and we stop to get something to eat, and we take our helmets off, so often someone says, well, good for you. And I look at them like, what's wrong with us? We're just riding motorcycles through the mountains. The bike doesn't know what age I am. So it's having that passion, trying to find something that connects you with your being alive right now, as opposed to saying, I can't believe I'm 45 or 50 or 60 or 70. I've got to slow down. I'm suggesting that your life is still in front of you.
Well, maybe we shouldn't touch on all your adventures, though.
Well, another thing that struck me, you mentioned already that your parents both died at fairly young ages. And you said you didn't know them except as your parents, you didn't know them as people, and that you want your children and your grandchildren to know you. It's almost as though maybe you didn't have the time earlier in life to discover yourself or to find out who you were.
I think that's great. Yeah, absolutely. What I found was this, and I think it's universal again. As a young boy, as a young man, between high school, college, law school, I knew my parents as wonderful parents, but not as people. What did they worry about at night? What did they dream about at night? I never got into that. I don't know if kids really do. They're so busy being kids.
Mm-hmm.
And when they died, we found letters that they wrote. Letters that they wrote when they were dating during the war, and this passion and love. And
people don't have that these days. It's going to be just email stuff.
Yeah, and it's really gone. Isn't that sad? I mean,
and for historians too.
Yes, and just following up on that for a second, when something really touches me deeply and I want to thank someone, I do a handwritten letter.
Gets attention.
Yes, because I want them to know it's not just a text or an email saying mm-hmm. thanks, but I take a letter out with an envelope. I tell folks when I speak to them, I said, there used to be a thing called an envelope with a stamp, you know, and I would write something. But I found these letters, and I realized that I didn't know them as, they were to some extent strangers to me. And that was so sad because I missed them so much. And I don't want the same thing to happen between me and my children and grandchildren. And I don't want the same thing to happen to anyone else. I want them to start telling their story to the family, maybe even videotaping at the family dinner or a Thanksgiving time, taking a camera out and talking about what it was like growing up at a certain earlier age
mm-hmm.
and connect with the history of your family. I think it's really critical.
We have an emailer who says, I appreciate the author's point that we need to have fun and find meaning, but what caught my attention is his introduction was to the trigeminal neuralgia, which has debilitated me since a stroke 2 years ago. Sorry to digress from the topic of the book, but I'd like your guest to take a minute to talk about the treatment he got in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
And because he says the pain is so debilitating that his life has fallen apart. Ed.
Yes. Ed, my heart goes out to you. I know what you're going through. It is god-awful. The Pittsburgh, if you go online and read about Dr. Peter Janetta.
How do you spell that?
I believe it's Janetta.
Okay.
And there are doctors in Florida that do this procedure. They do the Janetta procedure in Florida. But I write about it in the chapter called The Gate in the book, going through the gate of this surgery. The procedure is where they drill a hole in the back of the skull, and they basically resheath the fifth cranial nerve. I had the surgery June 19th, 2003. Not that I remember the date.
No. Who's counting?
Who's counting? And I had that surgery, and it has been a blessing ever since. Off medications, off, there's no pain, and it was miraculous. I've had other friends who have had trigeminal neuralgia that have had the surgery also. So my suggestion to Ed is that go online and read about Dr. Janetta and read about doctors that also do this type treatment.
The Janetta surgery, procedure.
The Janetta procedure in Florida.
Okay. And we hope that helps.
Okay, let's take a call or two. This is Deneen in Miami Beach. Hi there.
Hi. Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks. I just was driving to pick up my husband for lunch, and I caught your radio show, and I just wanted to call in and say, I'm 42 years old, and I'm loving so much just listening to what you say. My life's work is such that I try to preach every day to just live fully and be a blessing to everybody. And a lot of that is from going through health challenges, but what I was telling the man when I first called is I go out now and chalk positive inspirational quotes on the sidewalk of South Beach. And just to get people to walk by and kind of raise a vibration and get people to think about deeper meanings in their life. Today, the quote was, great things never come from comfort zones. And I have a huge following, and I influence people and inspire people from all over the world. And just like with your radio show, you're just never too old to try something new or, you know, get out of your comfort zone. And talking on the sidewalks for me was inspired by my five-year-old, but I love it. It's, you know, a way to express myself and help the world, my little way to give back to the world.
That's absolutely wonderful, and that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Right,
I'm talking about not phoning in your life, but really being totally committed and being 100% of 100%. Good for you, and God bless you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having this program.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we'll move along to Kat. Kat, K-A-T in Miami. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, I have a traumatic brain injury, and it seems like I'm interested in this procedure you had. Did you experience losing interest in any of your prior interests or hobbies after you had the surgery?
No, and again, my thoughts and prayers go out to you. No, not at all. This procedure was... it was as if I was reborn. In fact, Dr. Janetta, when he saw me in the recovery room, said, I want to let you know that I drilled the hole, I changed the air, I gave you a tune-up, and you're brand new and ready to go.
So gives me the heebie-jeebies just talking about it.
It was as if I was reborn and a resurrection. But no side effects on it. And look it up online, see what you think.
I enjoyed reading your blogs.
Thank you.
And on your website, which is theagelessexperiment.com. How did that come to pass, your blogging?
That was the precursor of the book. It was after the moment with at the Rocky Mountain National Park with the ranger. And I started, in fact, the first blog entry was about that.
Did you ever write him and thank him?
I didn't, but I should. I have to look him up and find what happened, because he's really changed my life for the better.
Yes.
And hopefully people who read Hour of the Wolf, it'll help them also.
So, but more about the blog, The Ageless
Yes.
Experiment.
The Ageless Experiment was my wanting to say to people, don't sell yourself short. And as each day goes by, I know it's a youth culture and all that, but we're ageless. It's us today. And why can't we just enjoy the day for what it has to offer us? Nothing more, nothing less.
Well, it's been a joy to have you with us and
Thank
your
you.
Wife, Marjorie. Paul Lipton's an author. He's a speaker and a retired attorney, or I believe, as his wife said, a recovering
lawyer, yes.
recovering lawyer. And his book is entitled Hour of the Wolf, An Experiment in Ageless Living. His website is theagelessexperiment.com. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. An absolute delight. Thank you.
Food and Dining up next. And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman on this Thursday. Well, joining us now is chef, author, and syndicated columnist, my longtime friend Linda Gassenheimer. We have an important health-related program today. So what's on the menu?
Well, here's the question. Is there a link between cancer and diet? Well, it raises many questions. I mean, does it eating certain foods increase our chance of developing the disease or maybe causing a recurrence? What should we eat if we're going through cancer treatment? Well, Alice Pereira is here to give us some answers. She's a board-certified oncology nutritionist, wow, and a registered dietitian with Baptist Health South Florida. Welcome, Alice Pereira.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, this is a very, very interesting subject, and I'm looking forward to getting some really good information here. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any cancer or diet-related questions for Alice Pereira? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. And the phones are open now. Do we have email,
yes,
Bonnie?
Yes, radio at WLRN.org, radio at WLRN.org.
Well, also with us, our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. You can read his wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column and Fred's wine column. They're both in today's Miami Herald.
Now, a little bit of wine is good, right?
Yes.
Especially
yes,
red,
it's
right?
All right. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, Fred, that means you can say hello.
Hello. I don't feel that I'm qualified to talk about the medical aspects of wine, so I thought I'd talk about something a lot simpler, which is the global future of wine.
All right. Sounds interesting. And it's okay, because Alice says it's all right. All right, Fred?
Oh, glad to hear it.
Good.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit, you're saying.
Moderation, that's always the hard
exactly.
part.
Exactly.
Okay, Alice Pereira, cancer and diet. So is there a proven link? Have there been any peer-reviewed studies?
Yes, there's definitely a link between cancer and diet, because diet affects our weight, and there's a link between obesity and cancer. More than two-thirds of our population is overweight, and a third is obese. And
A third.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yes. We're talking about just the United States.
Yes. And so how do they classify obesity? It's basically we use a body mass index table. And between 25 and 30 is overweight. Above 30 is obesity.
Wow. So, we know that obesity, we've been taught that obesity can lead to heart disease and diabetes, but we're not always know that we concentrate on obesity and cancer. I don't think most people would think of it in those terms. And you've mentioned to me in the past that it increases our risk for pancreatic, colorectal, breast, endometrial, and kidney cancer. So what is the theory here? What does obesity have to do with it?
Well, there's three factors, especially with breast and postmenopausal women. First is that we have, the more obesity we have more fat cells, and that increases our production of hormones, especially estrogen. Second, obesity also causes insulin resistance, and that's like a key word. It means we have increasing the resistance, we have more circulating insulin in our bodies.
Well, let me ask you about that, because it's a little confusing, because we know about insulin resistant people develop diabetes.
Yes.
And then they take insulin.
Yes.
So this is not what you're talking about, is
no.
it?
No, this is different. All of our bodies produce insulin, and it produces insulin every time we eat.
What is insulin?
Insulin is a hormone that's used in our cells to utilize the food we eat and turn it into energy.
And sugar.
To utilize the food that we eat that turns into sugar, to utilize that sugar in our cells to give us energy.
So without the insulin, we don't have the food doesn't become energy in our
exactly.
bodies.
Exactly.
And so we need it.
Right.
But what you're saying, I think, is that correct me if I'm wrong here, that the fat cells, because of the fat cells, the body's producing more insulin.
Exactly.
Too much. And it has nothing to do with the diabetes situation.
No.
So this extra insulin, what happens with it?
It's inflammatory. Extra insulin means that your body, whenever you have more insulin and in your body, could contribute to hypertension, diabetes, and now they're saying there might be a link with cancer.
So it could possibly cause tumors to happen.
Exactly.
With the with this increase because of the extra fat cells.
Exactly.
So that's how I got it straight.
Yes.
Okay, good.
So why do fat cells cause the production of insulin?
Well, fat cells increase your insulin resistance and also produce more hormones. Then also the obesity, the more fat cells increase also inflammation. The whole, it's like a key chain reaction of inflammatory mediators that happen when you have more fat cells.
So, okay. Well, we have a call here.
Yes.
On line one. It's Mark in Miami Beach. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm here. How are you?
Go ahead.
Good. Go ahead. We're great. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark. But do you have a question?
I have a question concerning food and cancer prevention or helping with cancer. You know, I've had a lot of sun exposure growing up surfing and fishing, and I'm starting to getting a lot of peeling on my skin that doesn't seem to be healing as much. I'd like to know what foods are recommended to help prevent melanoma.
So can foods affect, I think, can affect skin cancer?
They help prevent?
Okay.
Well, you know, the main thing with melanoma is the exposure to the sun. And that's what we're telling people, that it's important to get exposure because of our vitamin D levels. And vitamin D is a vitamin that has been, you know, has a lot of benefits. But the excess of exposure to sun causes melanomas. I mean, definitely eating a healthy diet definitely helps, you know, a diet that's rich in, we're going to talk later on, rich in plants, fruits and vegetables, antioxidants. But the main thing with melanomas is more...
It's more had to do with the sun.
More than diet-related,
right,
you're saying.
Right, so...
I see.
So he needs to stay out of the sun and...
limit exposure to the sun, yes.
Right, and I think everybody needs to know that they need to have a checkup every year about skin cancer and that
yes.
kind of thing.
What about herbal remedies and
well, for the skin, you know, vitamin C, you know, it's very good. Zinc, protein, but it's just a balanced diet because now we're finding out that it's not one specific nutrient. Is when we eat foods. That's why we're not recommending so much sometimes supplements. We want people to eat the fruits and the vegetables rather than just buy these compounds in a pill.
So tell us, you said we're going to talk about diet and what we should be eating or what we shouldn't be eating. So what's your take here? What should we be eating?
We need to eat a balanced diet, a diet that's you know, plenty of fruits and vegetables, fresh fruits and vegetables, whole grains, and when I mean whole grains, I mean like, you know, whole brown rice, whole wheat pasta, quinoa. We need to eat lean meats, like fish, salmon, especially the, you know, the rich omega-3 fish. Basically, we need to eat a balanced diet, everything in moderation, small portions.
So this is what we've been told. Untold and told, and the problem is, how do we do it?
Exactly.
And that's difficult. Bonnie, we'll get to that in a minute. Did you have an email there?
Yes. Claudia writes, my sister-in-law had neuroendocrine carcinoid at the early age of 27. From books I read, we were told to limit sugar. Is cancer fed by sugar? That's her first question.
Yes. Well, we ask the patients to limit the amount of sugar and the unnecessary sugar, which the sweets, the jellies, the jams, the cakes, the cookies. But like we were saying, our body needs sugar. Our brain needs sugar to function. So it's not like we need to take out all sugar because, for example, rice and pasta and starch is turning to sugar. They're made up of sugar. So it's all about moderation. We need to take out the unnecessary sugar and the excess amount of sugar, of carbohydrates.
Her other question, since there wasn't a connection of genes with my sister-in-law's cancer, and I'd like to avoid my husband and children to have any connection with this disease, I was also looking to alkaline water. Is there any link between alkaline water and the cure or prevention of cancers?
No, that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. What is alkaline water? Do we know?
The thing is that, you know, your stomach has a certain pH, and it's an acidic pH, and you need that pH to absorb nutrients and to break them down. So, you know, your body will compensate whatever pH, if you're having a certain water that's more alkaline or acidic. Okay. It would make sure that it maintains that pH.
Right. Well, our phone number is 800-743-9576 if you'd like to call in with a question for Alice. Do you have another email?
Another emailer. Okay. Clelia wants to know, does soursop, guanabana fruit, prevent cancer or assist in the prevention of cancer returning?
Guanabana.
Well, you can tell.
It's guanabana.
Sorry about that.
I mean, I've come, a lot of patients that I've been seeing lately have been, you know, asking me about this fruit. And the thing is that, you know, always there's not like substantial studies to say either or, but definitely it's
good, not bad for you.
Exactly.
Well, and I think the point that we've been talking about is something that we've been talking about for so long. You need to have all the different parts of your diet. Use fresh fruits and vegetables. Use lean meats. And I mean, this is something. It's a Mediterranean diet, is what we've been talking about.
Exactly.
If she fills up on soursop, doesn't mean she's not going to get cancer.
Exactly.
Is what we're trying to say.
Is it more genetic anyway?
Well, it not necessarily. It could be genetic. It could be due to hormones. It could be due to a bacteria or a virus. It could be, you know, now we're finding, for example, people who suffer from reflux could have a higher incidence of esophageal cancer. So it could be different things.
Well, that sounds like fun.
What about juices versus fruit? Are fruit much more...
better.
The fiber much better for you than
definitely.
The juice.
Definitely. We want to get that fiber in. We're seeing that people are not getting enough fiber. We need at least 25 grams of fiber a day, minimum.
And that's hard to get.
It's very hard to get.
Yeah, it is. And so you really got to concentrate on that.
What food has the most fiber?
Beans, legumes, and, you know, berries, blueberries.
Fruits, you can get them in fruits and vegetables, but you really need
to. Yeah, definitely fruits and vegetables. I mean,
you know, an apple has only 4 grams. So you need 25.
Exactly.
You have to know that. Well, I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with board-certified oncology nutritionist and registered dietitian Alice Pereira about the link between diet and cancer. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking with Alice Pereira. She's a board-certified oncology nutritionist and registered dietitian with Baptist Health South Florida, and she's been giving us the latest news and some great advice about the link between cancer and diet. So talking about cancer and diet and what should we eat, we've been talking about how do we get some of these foods into our diet and all that. It's Dinner in Minutes time, and today's Dinner in Minutes is let me see what it is. Here it is. It's curry crusted scallops with carrots and rice. And what happened is that I've lost my notes here. I want to make sure I've given you the right notes. Everybody's laughing at me. Okay, Dinner in Minutes. This fits the government nutritional guidelines. So sweet scallops, they're touched by some curry, and then we have the side dish has some shredded carrots. And Alice is shaking her head yes, because curry has turmeric in it.
Exactly.
Right? Okay, and turmeric happens to be good for us. Is that right?
Yes, it's very good for cancer.
Now, I have a question, Linda. Did you make your curry the way we were taught by...
Last week.
This is Dinner in Minutes. I bought my curry powder.
Okay.
But be sure, if you're going to buy your curry powder, to buy it if new. If it's over 6 months old, it won't have any flavor if it's been in your cupboard for that long. So anyway, you just have a dusting of the curry powder on the scallops. You cook the scallops for 2 or 3 minutes per side. That's it. Take them out of the skillet. And here's something that I think will surprise everybody. I add some apricot jam, a little water to melt the jam, and some cream, a little bit of cream. And Alice is saying, yes, we can have the cream. And here's the point. You can have a little something sweet. You can have a little bit of cream, and that's okay, because it's...
everything is in moderation, and sometimes we take things to the extreme. So any diet that takes anything to the extreme, I don't agree with. I think everything's a balanced. And even, you know, it's okay if you have a little fat or a little sugar, as long as you do it in moderation, small amounts.
Right. So, and then with that, with the curry and all that, we can have a little bit of rice. So you cook the rice. I cook it like pasta in boiling water. Drain it, add some shredded carrots that you can buy already shredded in the supermarket, olive oil, and salt and pepper.
Sounds good.
So sounds good. I'm okay. All right. Thank you, Alice. Well, the complete recipe and a photo is at dinnerminutes.com. And if you want another quick recipe, that glazed meatloaf with sweet potatoes and green beans, it's in today's Miami Herald. And she's shaking her head yes, too, because even meatloaf we can have on a balanced diet. So look in the Herald for that recipe. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
You know, that recipe you just gave sounds absolutely marvelous. I'm going to try to make that really soon.
Oh, good.
Good sounding stuff. Anyway, as we go into the new year, I thought I'd talk a little bit about the state of wine in America and in the world. So here's what's trending. Americans love wine, in moderation, of course. We drank more of it last year for the 19th year in a row, keeping our place as the world's biggest wine-drinking nation. We love California wine. It's 58% of everything we drink. But we don't want to spend a lot on it. 48% of all the wine we buy is less than $11 a bottle. We say we prefer dry wine, but more and more we're turning to sweet wines. The fastest growing varieties in the U.S. are Moscato, up 33%, and sweet red wines, up 22%. Our favorite varieties are, in order, Chardonnay, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Pinot Grigio, Moscato, sweet red wines, and Malbec. But still, we shouldn't get too proud of ourselves. Americans last year still spent $3 on beer for every dollar we spent on wine. And the future of wine is kind of surprising. Global warming is pushing to the north the boundaries of growing grapes. England today has 400 wineries.
That is amazing, really.
When you think stuff probably goes well with English food.
But when you think that England's on the same latitude as Labrador. It's north.
Yeah. But they're out there in the ocean, and that moderates everything, apparently. At the same time, which is also surprising, Western Europe is lagging. Italy, France, and Spain are drinking more beer and sodas and less wine these days. And wine is also moving to the east. Within 5 years, China is on schedule to double its wine business and become the world's biggest producer of wine and its biggest consumer.
Wow, that's amazing.
Even the Russians are starting to drink wine, cheap wine mostly, but it's not likely to catch up with vodka anytime soon. And as I said last week, India is starting to drink some wine. Moet and Chandon, the people who make the famous Dom Perignon champagne, is introducing a new champagne to be made and consumed in India. And farther into the future, who knows? Another country that's in the geographical zone that could grow grapes if it wanted to is North Korea. And how'd you like a glass of that?
All right. Thank you,
Fred. Fred, what happened to the French?
Well, they're starting to, they like beer because it's lighter, and what the big thing going on there is that it's being taken over by Coca-Cola. There's a nice trend.
Coca-Cola in France?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
There goes their national pride, huh?
All right, that's code of line, too. Hi, Sarah, hi, you're on the air. Hello, Sarah, you there?
Yes. I have a comment to make. When I went through breast cancer about 4 or 5 years ago, I was told not to eat fresh fruits, which I thought, what? That's crazy. And what was even crazier is that they gave me the menu when they were giving me lunch, and there was an apple on the plate.
I think sometimes when patients are going through chemotherapy, their immune system could be depressed. And because of that, we tell patients they need to wash well their fruits and vegetables. Sometimes we tell them, now they're being a little bit more liberal, like saying if you have them at home, it's okay if you have fresh fruits and vegetables, as long as you wash them well. But we kind of try to tell them outside of your house, try not to eat raw fruits and vegetables because of the pesticides. You don't know how they're washed. And I think that's the whole theory behind it. And before, we used to tell patients that their white blood cell count was very low to stay away from raw fruits and vegetables.
And how? What's the best way of washing them? Should you use Clorox in water or just?
No.
Okay.
They have a solution that they sell sometimes to wash fresh fruits and vegetables that you could use. But you just want to make sure you rinse them well underwater.
Rinse them well or with a little lemon juice, a little vinegar or something.
Or sometimes
like
vinegar.
Yeah.
Would, in the water.
That's safer.
Clorox. Right. No, I knew of somebody who was going through cancer and used to put a drop of Clorox in the water and then...
Well, I think we've got a lot of chlorine in our water that we drink.
No, you're probably right.
Coming through. Do we have time just for one more call here on line one?
Quickly.
Yeah, okay. Hi, Fred and Fort Lauderdale. Quick question, please.
Hello, yes. Back when I was in high school, I was told that the raw sugar, for fine sugar, when it gets in your stomach, it causes the Isles of Langerhans in the pancreas to just dump insulin to digest it.
Let's get an answer from the doctor on that.
From the nutritionist.
Oh, anyway, what I'd like to know is you showed an alternate thing about cancer, and I was wondering, does this thing that I have learned in high school also call...
Okay, Fred, I'm sorry, we're almost out of time. Quickly, refined sugar, we should just keep it in balance?
Or? Yeah, definitely try to take away the refined sugar from your diet and just have more of the complex carbohydrates, like the brown rice, the quinoa, and stay away from the refined.
A lot of it. Exactly. A spoonful a day is not going to hurt you.
Exactly.
But a lot of it, three donuts for breakfast is not on the scale.
Definitely
not. Okay, well, it's been really, really an interesting week. Alice Pereira, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
She's board-certified oncology nutritionist and registered dietitian at Baptist Health South Florida. How can we contact you if people want to get a hold of you?
Well, they could actually email me at alicep@baptisthealth.net.
That's simple. alicep@baptisthealth.net. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Joseph and Bonnie, great to be with you.
Mm-hmm. Likewise.
Next week, we'll be talking about home food delivery with somebody called Deliverlean. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And thanks for listening. Our producer is Richard Ives, technical direction by online producer Paul Leary. We have free audio archives of this and previous programs at our website. That's WLRN.org. More information and links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. We return Monday with University of Miami Law Professor Dr. Marvin Jones, author of Fear of a Hip-Hop Planet. So here's our good old boy calendar for January 16th. On this day in 1911, 101 years ago, the birth of Hall of Fame pitcher Dizzy Dean in Lucas, Arkansas. He was 30-7 for the Gas House Gang Cardinals of 1934. And as a TV commentator, he said things like, "He thrung him out and he slid into third." And on this day, 1935, 79 years ago, the birth of racing giant A.J. Foyt in Hockley, Texas, the king of the Indy 500 with 4 wins. And one more while we lose the wife, dog, and the double wide. On this day, 1944, 70 years ago, the birth of country music's Ronnie Millsap in one of my favorite towns, Robbinsville, North Carolina. He's won 6 Grammys. So we leave you with a thought from old Diz, the last National League 30-game winner. Quote from Dizzy Dean, "Let the teachers learn them English, and I'll learn them baseball. There's a lot of people in the United States who say ain't, and they ain't eatin'." That is, isn't, and they ain't eatin'. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for tuning in. Here and Now is next from NPR News.